Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-Day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Hi, everybody. Monday morning, back to work. Energy is up. Hope you guys are doing fantastic. Okay, hope you guys are well. Today's an exciting show. Today we're going to dive deep. Mondays, as I always say, by the way, we're live on LinkedIn, we're live on YouTube, we're live on my Facebook page. Go check it out wherever you want to be hooked and connected to. And it's going to be my CRE Shark Eye podcast, which is going to be ripped off this and going to be on the podcast very soon, right after this show, so you guys can drive and listen to. Today we have a very exciting show to have. We have with us Joe Schwartz from P3 Properties. He's the, director of marketing, and he's going to tell us all about the office market, what these guys do, and that's very cool and very interesting, and I'm going to get him joined on the show right away, and we're going to dive deep into it. So here you go, and Joe, how are you?
Hi, Ishai, how are you? Wonderful. Perfect.
Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your time for that. And today is going to be pretty exciting. What we're going to do today, we're going to dive deep into the office market. And you guys, that's what you guys do, right?
That's correct. Thank you for the introduction. I really appreciate that. So, you know, I'm the director of marketing, but it's, you know, it's a loose term. Most people believe marketing is, you know, just promotion. But we take a much more holistic approach on marketing. You know, essentially marketing is bringing your goods and services to the people and making sure you get picked in the marketplace. And in our case, we can't really bring our stuff to people. We have to bring people to our fixed assets. We have our real estate. Our portfolio is about 3 million square feet. And it's mostly office, suburban campus. That's our focus. We have a smattering of other, you know, assets. We're definitely looking to expand.
Who's the owner, by the way, of the company?
I'm sorry?
I think he's also on my LinkedIn. Who is the owner of the company?
The CEO and founder is Harvey Rosenblatt. He's been in real estate for quite some time. He's a very hard worker, and he has a real eye for, you know, excellent assets that need love, excellent assets that need rebranding, excellent assets that have a lot of value add opportunity. And he's worked hard to build our portfolio from basically nothing up to about 3 million square feet today. 2.5 million we own. We manage in addition to managing our own assets, we manage some other assets for other people in office. And office is a different animal. Most of the people in real estate.
You know, before we dig into the, you know, to the whole story of office, which is pretty exciting. I can't wait to hear. But first, you know, tell us about yourself a little bit. You know, before we dig in. So people get to know you.
I get so excited to talk about my business and forget about myself. But
So
I've been in marketing for quite some time. I've been in marketing for about 10 years now, a little bit over a decade. A lot of different. My career path took a little bit of a, you know, it wasn't a straight line, I guess, like everybody's. So I started out, you know, in the creative business, and it was more like an ad account executive at a newspaper where I dealt with a lot of different businesses. And I sort of approach marketing with the idea and the philosophy that if you were creative enough, you know, magically the doors would open, the money would flow towards your product and service.
Right.
And as I learned, sitting with business owners and strategizing with them, you know, we didn't just make ads. We had to sit down and understand the goals of the business. And, you know, I was young and I learned a lot from my mistakes. And over tripping over myself, eventually I realized that there's a lot more to the picture. You need to really understand the pain points of the customer. You need to really understand the timing. You need to understand what are the needle movers in this particular industry. Is being cheap or expensive important to your customers? Is it being convenient? Is it having, you know, there's a lot of different things that speak to a lot of different people. And slowly but surely, I sort of developed this sense that marketing requires the marketers, let's call it what we typically think of as the advertisers, need to be in sync with the operations, the product, you know, developers. However, whatever shape it takes in a business, the marketers need to be aligned with the product and service that's being sold. About 5 years ago, six years ago, I got into the real estate field. That's what happened. I got hired by a real estate firm to be an in-house marketing director.
When this thing swallows you, you're all in.
And I had family members in the business in different areas. I had people, family members in construction. I had family members who was a developer, and I always sort of knew it in the back of my head. And once I got into it, it was just like it spoke to me. You know, the number, right. Bricks, the people, everything together just spoke to me. It's something that I really, really, really liked. So I'd been in an ancillary service to in a title agency towards real estate. I got to look at a lot of deals, a lot of transactions, understand, you know, the buying criteria of a lot of our clients. And then about 3.5 years ago, I sort of just said, you know what, I really want to get my hands around the building. I want to get into this industry for real. I don't want just, right. I took a position with P3, and it's been an amazing, amazing experience. We've started only 6-year-old company, relatively small, we have about 30 employees. It's something there's new and exciting things every day. And the scope of what we work on is, obviously tremendous. We're talking about commercial properties. Some of our properties are 500,000 square feet or larger. So it's just it's been a journey. And every day brings new struggles, and every day we learn new things. It's something that I have a lot of appreciation for.
100%. Tell me something. Can you tell us a little bit about P3 Properties? Let's dig into that. We can obviously, there's so much we can say, but I'm saying, in terms of what the company does, in terms of the focus of the company, can you tell us a little bit about? What type of properties, sure. What type of locations, what type of what is the asset class within the office market that sure. The company is focused on?
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about it. And yeah,
absolutely. So we like to focus on larger trophy assets. Not in suburban markets. So not urban market. We're not talking about towers in the city or even in Jersey City on the waterfront.
Secondary markets.
We call it secondary market, but I guess it's a class of its own. I mean, I'm not sure if it's just New Jersey.
Right, because trophy assets are a class of its own, right.
The suburban office campuses, the large campuses, which back in the day in the 70s and 80s were developed for single unit users. Let's say, a Bellworks, for example, is a good famous example everyone's familiar with. But there's many other campuses across New Jersey. There's hundreds of millions of square feet of office space, and a lot of it was developed for single users, very sprawling, very large scale. And then as the needs changed, as globalization took over, trends shifted, and then trends shifted then, they're shifting back. Trends constantly shift. There's definitely a focus. So our focus is we try to find assets that have, stable in-place tenancy. Obviously, if it's multi-tenanted, just like anyone else, we like to have a diversity of a tenant base so that, we sort of hedge our bets. You never know what could happen with any one company. And we like to look at buildings that are 60, 70% occupied, which present a significant upside. If you can get them up to 85, 90% occupied,
that's very interesting.
Returns on your investment. The office market is unusual in the sense that the valuations aren't like residential real estate, where it's worth whatever it's worth, vacant or occupied. If an office building is vacant, its value plummets. If an office building is occupied with strong leases, its value soars. So you have opportunity to come in. It's high risk, high reward. It's hard to attract tenants. There's a lot of competition. But when you do, you're usually securing them for a longer time period of time. It's not 1 year lease like residential. It's 5, 7, 10 or longer.
Absolutely.
Let
me ask you this. I have a lot of questions. Very interesting. Let me ask you this. First of all, what type of tenant mix your game plan is, basically?
It's a very good question. So each little niche market has its own, there are certain drivers that will drive what type of tenants come to each market. For example, in Hackensack, it's near the courthouses, there are a lot of attorneys, you know, in certain areas, there's a lot of, there's a life science belt where there'll be a lot of, you know, drug companies, Teva, Pfizer, Allergan, things like that. And there's companies that are associated with them, labs and testing facilities, you know, innumerable. There are certain areas where it's more of a local tenant mix, where you have accountants, engineering firms, architects, medical and medical office, back office are driving a lot of demand right now. Medical and medical office, meaning ambulatory surgery centers, urgent cares, things like that, even an office.
Yeah, but that isn't it like the medical sector, you know, those medical offices, the infirmaries, all those, weren't they popular also prior to COVID, meaning going to COVID later, but I'm saying
they were, but because they're becoming so popular, they've eaten up a lot of the existing good locations, and now they're expanding out. They're even approaching, you know, office buildings that have street placement, relatively close to a new medical center or an existing medical center. You know, if you're onboarding a lot of new doctors, a lot of new nurses, there might be a lot of back office paperwork. So it's a lot. It's both medical front end usage and back end usage that we see driving a lot of demand. But it really each area and each market is driven by different you know drivers of you know of industry. You know, it's common to have multiple drivers. My point is, it's rare for us to have, you know, a building where we'll say we're only going to get this type of tenant. New Jersey is a very, very diverse state. It's a very populous state. And thank God there are a lot of businesses, a lot of strong businesses. You know, there's a lot of Amazon back office now. Amazon sellers are expanding their teams, right? They need, besides warehouse space, they need office space. They need customer service. A lot of, if you notice that this past Black Friday, Shopify had $2.4 billion in sales. Now, Shopify is the back, is the engine for, you know, private website sales. People are not selling on Amazon. People have realized that they have to move off Amazon in order to not be controlled by the big platforms. They need to have their own websites, build their own client base. And those type of companies also are they're e-commerce private companies that that need space. So, you know, the destruction of retail is creating a new opportunity in e-commerce. That's for sure. In the office market.
That's true. So summing up the tenant mix aspect, it sounds very interesting. But if I have to sum up like the tenant mix aspect, what would be the call, so-called Bible, you know, for that, you know, for that ask? Meaning, when the company in P3 Properties say, okay, that's what we're going for. These are the anchors. These are the moms and pops. These are the how do you guys play with that when you go for finding an asset?
That's a great question.
And also putting it up and also playing that value add game.
Sure. It's a great question. So we'll do a lot of in-depth research. You know, obviously some of it's how we get to do about it is preparatory. I can't share everything, but we will do a lot of research, a deep dive into the area, try to track down which, you know, we will make a sort of look at the vacancies in a building and say, okay, there's large ones, there's small ones, there's big ones that are like, you know, whales. Someone's going to take 60, 90, 100,000 square feet. We got small suites that are 3,000 square feet. We have white boxes. We have fully furnished. We try to take stock of what the existing opportunity mixes instead of just, you know, bulldozing everything. It's, you know, not very cost effective. So when we try to allocate our capital improvements and our, you know, and our and how we're going to spend money to attract tenants, maybe build spec spaces, you know, that will attract a certain type of tenant, we definitely do a deep dive and we sort of imagine, okay, we look at the existing tenant mix and we say, well, we got an attorney on the first floor, we got an attorney on the third floor. Attorneys look like they're comfortable here. Let's look at, you know, let's do some research on attorneys. We have an accounting firm. Firms don't mind clustering. It's very common. We have multiple wealth management firms in one building. We have multiple engineering firms in one building. It's common that you're tracking a certain where people live, the schools, the talent pool. There's a reason why businesses clump up and cluster up in certain areas. So what we'll do is we'll do a lot of research into who's available in the market, who's looking for space, who's in a building that maybe is not, they moved in 15 years
ago. That's your part is marketing, right? That's your part, marketing.
Correct. I'll do a lot of market research and we'll do, you know, a lot of the work is done by brokers in the office market. It's tremendous. You know, a lot of companies are still represented by brokers. And even though the advent of disruptive technology like the internet and then LoopNet and these type of things, companies still prefer to go through brokers to help them navigate the somewhat complex process of signing an office lease. So brokers do a lot of the work, but we work, you know, we're very activist. A lot of landlords are hands off, you know, we'll rely on the professionals. We do rely, But we also do a lot of work in tandem with our team of brokers. So we'll identify, the small mom pops that we think we're going to get, and we'll identify the few whales that will shoot for the moon. Sure, we hope to hit a home run. I mean, it's public knowledge, but a few years ago, we bought an asset in Parsippany, and Teva was a tenant. Teva Pharmaceuticals was a tenant. They had 90,000 square feet, and they were considering, you know, leaving, moving out of state. There was a number of considerations. Ultimately, we swung for the fences, and we hit a home run. And they, after a long, long, drawn-out process, we managed to secure them with God's help. We managed to secure them as a tenant in the biggest deal. It was the biggest deal of 2019. They ultimately took 350,000 square feet and made our building their North American headquarters. Those deals are rare. You know, you don't rely on those. You shoot for those, but 100%. You supplement those with a lot of hard work. A lot
of hard work. They're not the bread and butter, but you're right. We work hard for
5,000 square foot tenants. You got the 10 to 15s, and then you got the bigger tenants, the whales.
Okay, so let me ask you this. When you see, and that is, I'm starting to, drill down, okay, into the current situation slowly. So when you're talking about going into a value-add situation, meaning you're going into a building, and I'm not talking about only your company. I'm talking about the market right now. I'm talking about a vacant building, not a vacant. They have occupancy of, like you said, 60 to 70%, and then you want to play that game of the 30 to 40%. You want to play that game and fill it up and actually increase the value and all that stuff that you said. So my question is, and that's a very interesting thing. Where today, as opposed to yesterday's vacancies, meaning the 60 to 70% occupancy of yesterday, did it change from the 60 to 70% of occupancy today? Also the vacancy, meaning is the vacancy of yesterday's vacancy, is it different from today's vacancy? That's the question.
That's a very good question. I would say that we'll definitely be more conservative underwriting any deal going forward because, you know, depending on the building, but a building that has maybe 70% occupancy might only be actually 10% occupied right now, meaning a lot of the spaces are dark. And pretty much dividing line is...
Are you talking about practical, meaning it's still... Rent is coming in, like the leases are there, but
the leases are in place and the rent is being paid. You understand, these are long-term leases. People are optimistic. People want to come back. People have been telling us they've been revising the dates, but we've never stopped hearing dates that people say, listen, we want to get back to the office. It's not just, listen, we're very biased. We want all people to come back to the office. There's no question about 100%. It. But companies large and small have made it clear that they're suffering from not being in the office. Google, the most technologically advanced company, you know, that we know of, it has said that they can't compare the innovation and collaboration they get in person with the remote work. You know, for every Tim Ferriss 4-hour superstar rock star who only needs to work a few hours and is just as productive, you know, at home in his pajamas, there's 10 others, 9 others that could do well to be there with a manager. You know, middle managers weren't created for nothing. I'm not saying they're a great class.
No, for sure. The office environment is... There's something to say about that, meaning...
I mean, I know myself.
You will come back, without a doubt.
I'm a very hard worker. Even during Corona, I worked from home. You know, I put in a lot of hours. It was hard with the kids at home. It suffered. It just, even though I put in a full day, it wouldn't be the same as a full day at the office. You know, so people are very optimistic. They've been giving us target dates when they want to return. And now with the news with the vaccines, we really hope that we'll see people becoming more comfortable to return to work. So to get back to your question is... Will we take buildings with as low of occupancy as we once did? Perhaps not. Perhaps we're going to take a much closer look at the occupancy levels. But more importantly, there's a lot of uncertainty on, let's say in the past you would make a judgment call. Okay, we got 3 tenants in this building that are here for 7 more years. We got 2 tenants that are leaving, that are, their lease is up next year. And we got a few, maybe 30, 40,000 square feet of a building that are 18 to 24 months out. Now, in the past, you would underwrite with one assumption. Well, we think we'll renew. Let's say we'll take 50-50. We'll lose half of them. Okay, fine. We can make an assumption. Today, with the tremendous uncertainty due to Corona, people are kicking the can down the road. People are, you know, signing one-year extension saying, let's see what happens. People are, even if it hurts them, even if they're not getting TI money,
risk factors, you're right.
There's just so much uncertainty for a lot of companies. Even if they're optimistic, it definitely adds a layer of complexity. And, you know, there's no good answer. It's just our judgment calls are definitely going to be a bit more conservative. You know, we've looked at a lot of deals and said no to a lot of deals just for that reason this year. It's definitely revised our approach to, you know, to, you know, and our level of optimism of how we think we're going to be able to replace the in-place new tenants. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, renew the in-place tenants and find new ones.
Very, very, very interesting. Very interesting. Let me ask you this. Now we have COVID hit us, right? Everything has changed. So, you know what? Before we go into that, I have another question because that will lead into that. Okay. Sure. And the question is, are you guys dealing with a co-working market, you know, space, you know, that asset class? Are you guys dealing with that?
So it's an interesting question.
The WeWork types, as we call it.
Right. So WeWork, unless you've actually worked in a WeWork, right? You know, it's been successfully pitched in a very it's been successfully marketed in the sense that it's been given an appeal and a shine that that a lot of people might not, you know, that the reality doesn't, you know, translate so well. If you ever went into a WeWork, you'll see they're like cattle pens, tiny, tiny offices. The big, beautiful space with the planted live wall and the bar is maybe 1-2% of the entire floor space.
Right.
Obviously all the marketing. So it shows like fantastic. Most people do their best work in a private office in a quiet environment, right? Even if you go to WeWork, everyone's wearing sound canceling headphones. So in that sense of the co-working of a lot of people in one room, you know, and I'm not saying it doesn't work for certain users. I'm not disputing that. They were tremendously successful in actually filling up. But if you look at, you know, if you do a deeper dive, you see there's a lot of complaints about getting in and out of the buildings during lunch hour because the tremendous density. I'm sure there are issues with the bathrooms. You know, there's reasons for, you know, for the density levels in buildings. But in the sense of micro tenants, right, in the sense of small one-person law firms or two-person law firms or, you know, smaller, we call them micro tenants who in the past may have had to take very, very small or not prestigious space. We have worked with existing space. And let's say we have a building that's a 400,000 square foot office campus, four buildings, beautiful. It looks really nice. A lot of white collar and, you know, large tenants. We have 30,000 square foot tenants there. It's a prestigious address. Looks nice when you pull up. We had a space that was built out in a very old fashioned style with a lot of private offices. Today, much more open bullpens, even in non-co-working environments, a lot of open bullpens, which, you know, is a matter of debate and might just swing back in a few years. But we had a space that was a little bit hard to sell because of the amount of private offices. It had been a sales office for an old, you know, business. Every sales guy had to have his own private little suite. And it was sitting on the market for a while. We did a little research into the facts and figures of what it costs and you know, the underwriting of the nuances of running a shared space that would not have leases, obviously, and wouldn't have, you know, CAM charges. And ultimately, we launched a shared space. We went from 0 to 13,000 square feet within a year. And we've been very successful in attracting these micro tenants. They're usually very local. They live in the area.
So what you're saying is that you managed to take them and pull them out of those co-working areas, co-working spaces, and tell them, hey, what do you need to do that? I'll give you a good deal on a normal space, on a more spacious environment, on a private environment.
Correct.
And that'll be great for you.
Correct. I mean, it's not exactly private. It's imagine a large room with a number of private offices. So they share the kitchen. Now it is a WeWork environment, but it's much larger. You have a lot more square footage.
Yeah, like work better and all those guys. Yeah, I know.
You have a locked private door, not thin walls. It's thick walls. So it's been very successful. We've had real estate companies, 3D modeling companies, production company. Businesses that have between 1 and 6 employees have taken space from us, and they've been very happy because they have a nice address, always have parking, you have all the amenities in a building, they have a gym, you have a cafe, which these small, you know, smaller buildings that they could afford, the upstairs of a bank, you know, that type of space, the Class C office space. Now, for, yes, it's more expensive per square foot, but ultimately, if you only need one office, it's a great deal.
Tell me something. Listen, this is all very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. As you take care of the marketing aspect, can you tell us a little bit, you know, about your, where you go after you wake up, what do you wake up in the morning, as we call it? Where do you go to, everyone is a predator, right? You want to go after something. What do you go after in the morning?
So it depends on the day. I try to structure, because I have I have my finger in a lot of pies in our business, because marketing's not just advertising. There'll be days where I find, for me personally, I like having deep days, where I'll work 4 to 6 hours on one thing and then for another 4 hours on another thing. And then I'll get back to my other stuff that's on my list the next day. I like spending a lot of time on one thing. So what do I go after? So I'm always working to promote the buildings, the assets, creating an affinity for our buildings. We do things, tenant engagement, things that make the tenants like the property and appreciate being at the property. Always
cool
about what we could do to improve the property, within being the context of a landlord, within our budget. How do we make the property more attractive to people?
So let's pause right there. That's very cool. I like that. So let's dive into this. I think that everybody who listens wants to hear that, and that's very interesting. That's going to be very beneficial. So let's say, for example, you talk to tenants, okay? And that's what you do. You talk to a lot of tenants.
Right.
Okay? You need a people person to do that, et cetera. But my question is the following. When you talk to tenants, mostly, what's the main thing you hear from them that they would like to have in an office environment?
It's a very funny question. You'd think there'd be one thing, right?
Right.
Not the case. We've run surveys. We've spoke to tenants. People are people. Everyone has different things that they want.
Give me like five examples.
I'll give you an example. We ran a survey. One guy said, you have a gym. I need a certain type of powerlifting bar. This guy's a guy. We had basic equipment. We had like an all-in-one weight machine, that we do a lot of exercise on. We had some cardio equipment. This guy wanted a powerlifting bar. Ultimately, we decided not to do it because it wasn't popular. Only one person wanted it. And we were concerned about space. It wasn't going to be in a bad spot. It was a very large thing. We had a very interesting – I'll give you an interesting anecdote. We built a lounge in one of our buildings. We took a vacant space – and we said, we're taking this off the books. We put in furniture, game tables. It had a few private offices, so like breakout rooms. And people use it for all sorts of things. We've had Muslim tenants use it as prayer rooms. We've had nursing mothers use it as nursing room if their private office didn't have a lactating room. And we ran a survey of what else would you like to see in this lounge? And we thought people would say, ear hockey table or, more books or a larger TV or, video game console. And the most popular response,
what did they say?
We never predicted, was a vending machine. And the reason is because our cafe closes at 3:30. Most office building cafes close after a late lunch. If you're there after work, having a good time with a colleague at 5:30, 6 o'clock, 7, and you want to get a drink, there's nowhere to get a drink. So people want the vending machine. We didn't even, it didn't even approach us because we don't use it in that way. We just put it in for the tenants. There's no way to predict how they'll use it. So as far as what people say,
it's so important to stay, in touch with the clients, isn't it?
Very true. Very true. Because you could do things, you can make an improvement that nobody likes. You can cut down a tree that everyone says, that was our favorite tree. It blocked the window line. Well, maybe it doesn't look good in pictures, but the tenants love it. So before you cut down the tree, you have to balance between what you can do and without the tenants have to make a decision. But it is a balance. So today what we're hearing is obviously people are very safety and health conscious. We've done a variety of things, whether it's the extra cleaning,
social distancing,
disinfecting, putting special wraps on the handles of doors that, that officially, that are rated to, reduce the transmission of microbes. There's a lot of different things we're doing in health and safety, wellness. We have a new asset that we're marketing now where we invested a tremendous amount of money in building an entire outdoor area, a boardwalk, a patio, outdoor fitness equipment, because we believe people are going to want to spend more time outside. They're going to be able to tell their employees, hey, you come to work, but you can also get out middle of the day. There's what to do outside. There's a walking path. There's outdoor fitness equipment. So health and wellness have always been important to employers, but certainly more than ever now. So those are some of the things that we've done on the tenant engagement. And plus, we do oddball things. We just want to keep people in tune with building management so that the only time they're calling is not when they have a leak or a problem with the lighting or air conditioning. You want to have positive interactions with tenants as well.
Tell me something. If we already went that route, let's go a little bit to maintenance.
Sure.
What do you guys what are the main maintenance issues that you guys see that you could give a tip to everybody?
Okay. So I have a little experience with multifamily. And in multifamily, the maintenance, I feel, is a lot more reactive, right? You're in a residential.
It's a different animal.
Something breaks, you fix it, right? There's reserves, but something breaks, you fix it. That's the way it works.
It's also in multifamily, if you agree with me, it's a different. That's how I differentiate between office and multifamily many times. I say that multifamily is people live there. It's a very emotional thing. If something breaks, people get anxiety. It's like, they have to have it now. In an office, it's very important to fix it, but it's less on the emotional side. It's more on the technical side.
I would actually argue with you a little bit in that one, Ishai.
Oh, please, I love arguments.
Because even though it's true, where you put your head on the pillow, that's the most important place. There's no question about it. But what you're not realizing, as we do as owners and property managers, is that most tenants, especially larger ones, understand they're pretty much married to the building, right? They've signed a 5, 7, or 10-year lease, okay?
Yeah.
They're committed to a long-term relationship with you. They're paying you a great deal of money, right? Just understand that, you know, the size of the leases. If you're a 10,000 square foot tenant, you might be paying, you know, whatever it is, $20, $25, $30 a square foot. It's a lot of money. So they've committed a lot of money to you. They'll have dedicated either facility managers for the really large tenants or someone in the office who's the facility manager. And they take their job very seriously. If their employees are uncomfortable, you're going to hear about it. If they don't like the way you did snow removal, you're going to hear about it. If there's a leak, you will definitely hear about it. So even though it's not a place where they sleep, but there's usually someone whose job it is to take care and be very, very protective of their space, of their corporate space. So you're right, it's just the office, but it's not just the office.
I didn't mean just. I said it's less emotional, but of course it is.
Right.
Meaning we all have been in an office that if the AC doesn't work properly, you're like, hey, I'm hot. Hey, I'm cold. Right. Hey, I'm this. You know, we know that. It's a part of that. So it's important.
Right. But as far as maintenance goes, so because our
system. What is the main thing that you guys see as maintenance issue that occurs, you know, especially in your buildings? So I know you have trophy assets.
Right. We have really nice buildings. So like, you know, we're not chasing our tail. They're not old or decrepit buildings. These are buildings that have no deferred maintenance, not very little deferred maintenance. These are buildings that are kept. So I would say it's less the reactive. So the two main problems are HVAC and leaks. Those are the two most serious problems that you have. Someone's uncomfortable. That's a big problem. And if there's a leak, water is, you know, a building's worst enemy is water. And I think we can agree on that. So, you know, followed, I guess, much further behind the roof, because roofs are just expensive and they're, you know, they're prone to, you know, it's whatever. It's something that has to be dealt with and it's very expensive. So what I'll tell you is like this, the amount of resources and time that we put into maintenance is less about which thing we're fixing. It's much more about the fact that we have full-time crews who spend hours each day doing preventative maintenance and doing a checklist where they'll be there early in the morning running tests, making sure the chemical mixtures are right in the water treatment plants, making sure that everything's working with all the HVAC units. These are you know, units, you know, you're familiar, units the size of a house. You can literally hallways inside these HVAC units where you can do. So these guys have a long checklist where they start their day early in the morning. And many of engineers, you know, they're scheduled the day is they come in at 6:30 and leave at 3:30 because they have so much work to do before the day gets started to make sure that everything's moving. You know, systems like this, a building like this takes forever to get cold or hot. So if God forbid there's a problem, you need to be there early to make sure that you got the process started. So I would say, I guess from a maintenance perspective, if you're asking me where we put most of our resources, is into making sure that nothing goes wrong. That's really the job of the office. The job of the office management team is to really be very mindful. Everything gets replaced when it's supposed to get replaced. You know, obviously it's always tension between the property management engineers and the bookkeeping department. Why are we paying for this? What are we doing? But it's very important and something that I would say that's where the bulk of our resources are put into making sure everything stays good, followed by dealing with the issues that crop up. There's nothing you can do about it.
Okay. Very, very cool. Let me ask you this. I'm trying to wrap up everything that we thought about and wanted to talk. In terms of reaching out, the marketing aspect of it,
right?
You want to come and bring tenants. You want to fill out that 30% to 40%. Where are you going?
So that's a great question. That's the other part you asked. What do I do when I'm hungry? Where am I going for prey? So
yeah.
There's most of the heavy lifting, I would say, call it most, for most people, it's 100%. For us, it's probably 70% of the heavy lifting is done by brokers. We have good relationships with brokers. And the way you develop relationships with brokers is by, number one, appreciating them, and number two, making sure to pay their commissions on time and in full, which is something that we have a very strong reputation. You know, you could see we've been publicly thanked. I know Harvey, the CEO, is very proud of his track record of paying commissions, even when they're in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's, you know, you don't touch the money, as they say in sports. You know, you have to make sure that your brokers are taken care of. Brokers are a very strong community. They are, you know, busy with business owners, corporations, global corporations, national corporations, regional, down to local. You know,
they are the ambassadors. You're absolutely right.
They're providing value. They're vetting out buildings. So having good representation for yourself and developing good relationships with the brokers who only represent tenants is essential. So we spend a lot of time talking to them, seeing how we could add value. You know, sometimes someone will come to me looking for space and I don't have the right space for him. So I'll send them to another building. It might be our property, but we might have a different ownership structure. Or even if it's a different property. I mean, I can't say that's happened too many times because I'm not so familiar with open spaces, but try to make the broker's life easier. Or very often it's during the process where they, you know, you do whatever you can for them. We try to do things like where we get, you know, they'll need a space plan for the, you know, to show, you know, it's a vacant space with just white walls. You know, the tenant wants to envision what it would look like. If they have to wait for their architect for 3 weeks to produce it, you're going to lose the focus with them. So sometimes we'll throw something together ourselves at our cost, which makes the broker's life easier. You know, you have a landlord who's taking an activist role in trying to help you land this tenant. You know, the broker has the same goal as you. Get them into a space that works for them as quickly as possible so you can move on to the next broker, you know, the next tenant.
Yes.
So the brokers do a lot of the heavy lifting. We have a lot of broker outreach. We try to develop good relationships with brokers. We try to help them when we can. The second thing we do is we do a lot of, you know, canvassing and cold calling ourselves. You know, I'll take a list of local businesses and just let them know, listen, you know, this is a direct connection with a building owner. We have fantastic space. If you're growing, you're expanding, you're looking to move, you need a change, hit us up. We don't know when their lease expires. That's one thing. That's one wild card. Even CoStar, LoopNet, you look on these things, their databases are wildly off. And the reason I know this is because when they send you the research they do on your own properties, you see they're wildly off. And the reason for that is nobody wants to let anyone know when their lease is expiring.
Okay, so this is very interesting. When you say they're wildly off, can you elaborate a little bit about this? What do you mean?
Nobody wants to let the general public know when their lease is expiring. Okay? And the reason for that is because if they're a tenant, they're going to be harassed by brokers who want to represent them.
Right.
And if you're a landlord, the last thing you want is it's a year away from expiration. Some other landlord is, you know, or some other team of brokers is trying to poach away your tenant. So it's a very sensitive piece of information that's usually obscured or not given. Brokers won't provide it. You'll very often see press releases about large leases. There's never any word about the term. Square footage, you'll hear. The address, you'll hear, but you won't hear the term. It's just something that's a very sensitive issue.
That's known, yes.
So you know, for us, it's just about making sure that our space is very hospitable to businesses. We're always thinking about
So that is clear. But let me ask you this: what about creating, especially you on the marketing side, you know, on a marketing side, in terms of creating relationships with the larger guys, you know, the larger tenants? What do you do in order to do that?
So there's a lot of LinkedIn marketing. I find that it helps me connect with some people who are very high up on the food chain. It's been very helpful. I'll just point out like this, that we tread a thin line between helping our brokers and stepping on their toes. That's something that's just a realistic thing.
Yes.
You know, if I go after the CEO of a pharmaceutical company, number one, I probably don't have the you know, it's hard to connect with them unless they're, you know, that style, that type, they're younger. And I do think the decision makers are getting younger and younger in the sense, not younger in age, but they're decision makers today, 35, 40, right? In five more years, a young CEO will be a kid who grew up with internet, you know, grew up with Google first, who grew up with coming to pick up the phone and call a broker, you know. So I don't know how they're adapting to that, but I think that more and more transactions will happen. You see it in the residential market for sure with Redfin and all the other type of MLSs that have sort of disrupted the brokers quite a bit in the residential market. I think that it's just inevitable it will happen in industrial and in retail and in office too. In other areas of commercial real estate. That's my belief. I might be wrong, but that's my theory. So, you know, we were very active on LinkedIn. The step is to connect with people and get your content out front and people. Show them how you're engaging with tenants on a daily basis after the lease is signed. Show them that we did a contest where we had people make their picks about the MLB season last year, you know, the prior to COVID. It was a season-long contest. We constantly updated it. Then we had a drawing at the end, and we sent someone to the World Series. We sent him and his wife to the World Series. So that was a very exciting. It was simple. It wasn't very. You know, it didn't take a lot of resources, and it was something fun that everyone could get behind. And we had a lot of participants across a number of assets. We had hundreds and hundreds of people who participated, and ultimately we sent someone to the World Series, which is exciting. You know, it's something that the landlord doesn't have to do, but it's something that we do. You know, something that we do extra. And when CEOs see that, they know that, okay, there might be on paper, the rents are similar, the amenities are similar, but one place there's a clear commitment to maintaining a good relationship with the tenant. And another place is it's just a transactional relationship. You give us rent, we take care of the building for you.
Very cool. Let me tell me something. Are you guys involved in development or it's not your thing?
So, you know, I can't speak for the CEO. I can't speak for the founder.
Yes, of course.
We haven't we haven't done any development as of yet. You know, our sights are very high. You know, we'd like to get into a lot of different things. Right now, office is the focus. But obviously, as I said, office is tough right now. It's something that's, you know, you have to be very weary and very cautious. And because you're cautious, there are people who are not cautious who will just buy every building for a price that's, you know, not justified.
Right.
So it's been a very competitive market for us. So we're definitely looking to do other things. But as of yet, we have not done any ground up development.
Okay. So here it is. And you are, since we're talking to someone who is the pinpoint, as we call it, for the marketing side, I want to ask you this. Where do you see, and with that, we're going to start wrapping it up, but here's what I wanted to ask you. Where do you see this, you know, the whole office, you know, and market, you know, asset class in 5 years? Where do you see it?
So I'll tell you what I could see anecdotally. Okay. So I'll tell you like this.
Yes.
I think people will always be in offices. I think that there's just no way to replace that human element of people being together in one space for a common goal. Okay, that's point number one. Number two is there'll definitely be less of there might be less of a demand for office or a more spread out demand. You know, people will be in offices but smaller satellite offices. You know, because of technology. There are offices, especially in New Jersey. Let's just call it New Jersey. Jersey has a glut of offices. It has a lot of office. I know of many of these office buildings that are being turned into residential units. They're being transformed, either raised or gutted and renovated, because people need a place to live. That's factor number two.
Conversions is a big thing now, yeah.
Conversions. I believe number one is I believe people always need an office. Number two is I believe that a lot of the office is coming off the market because of conversions. And number three is I think that one trend that I think maybe is just beginning, but it will continue, especially for us in suburban office. I can't speak for the city or urban office, is that millennials and Generation Z, right? They're young, right? They're just getting to their 30s. They're in their 20s. Now it's exciting for them to be in a live, work, play environment where there's a bar downstairs and they can go to restaurants every night after work. But once they hit 35 and they have a kid or two, right, they want to move out to the suburbs and they don't want an hour and a half commute. I think there's a massive wave of employees that are going to want to be housed in.
I agree with that to a point. Okay.
So those are three things that we see as positives. Three things.
Let me ask, okay. So that's very interesting. Let me ask you this. Now with COVID and the big exodus from the big cities, New York City, California, and all these, obviously in your case, it's New York City. So the question is, did you guys feel in your properties, in your leases, people who came out of the city, big cities or big corporations or firms or whatever, came to you and said, listen, I had it. I don't want to be in the big city. I don't want to be in New York City. I'm out of Sixth Avenue. Yeah. I'm out of Midtown. I'm coming to you.
That's a great question. I wish it was the case.
It's not. Of that, very interesting. Tell me.
Inquiries. There's no question there have been inquiries. What I think is happening is a lot of the people who could afford the city rent are deep-pocketed corporations that could sit tight for a year or two. Be like, listen, everyone work from home, wait till the dust settles. No CFO of Boeing Boeing's a bad example, but no CFO is going to sign a 10-year lease at $75 a foot or $100 a foot right now and commit to $50 million, $70 million lease. At this point, right now they're punting. And they might make a few inquiries to the suburban thing, and I hope we'll get some of that spillover. But ultimately, I think Corona is going to go away. There's going to be a vaccine. Life will go back to normal. Actually, now that the tide seems to be turning, any smart CFO might go and sign a good deal in the city, you know? And I'm sure they can negotiate a great deal because those are ghost towns. They really are.
Exactly. I'm talking about it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I can't speak to it because I'm not an expert in that field, but I do think that it will come roaring back. I believe everything that's happening right now is temporary. That's
let me ask.
I don't put a lot of stock in
that. We're 100% agreement. And let me ask you this, but didn't you see, okay, let's forget about the government, big corporations, firms, all that stuff. Okay. Let's talk about the moms and pops, the small firms, the, what we call, what you called before the micro tenants. Did you see those guys move towards you or even them?
A few.
Not so much.
A few. Now,
why? Because they went home.
It wasn't like I had hundreds of thousands of square feet to fill up. We were at capacity. You know, we filled up. I mean, that's that. It wasn't like, you know, it was a nice amount of demand, you know, not over much, not too little. But there's, you know, I guess it's a better question for the Regus operators and stuff like that. People have a lot of different locations. We had one medium-sized location, so it's not a good sample size. I definitely got inquiries from attorneys who weren't traveling to the office that were sick of working at home, mostly attorneys. They were sent out of the city, basically, and they didn't want to work in their home office. That's where we got most of our inquiries.
Very interesting. Yeah. All right.
I don't have a big enough sample size to give you an accurate read on that question.
No, but that's pretty good. Listen, Joe, what can I tell you? This was really fun, and thank you so much for spending time here.
Sure.
And appreciate it. And of course, you know, before we close, I want to ask you if you have something to say about your company, about yourself, you know, about something that you want to say to everybody's listening.
I definitely appreciate that. Yeah. So I would say there's two things I would say in closing. Number one is, you know, we own and manage a good deal of office property. But recently, the last 18 months, we've been expanding out our arm. We have a distinct entity that we manage properties under. It's called the Blue Property Management. It's you can see I'm wearing this drop symbol. That's our icon. And our motto is that every person's a drop, but they make ripples that affect everybody else. So that's really our approach to marketing. Cool. You know, it sounds creative and soppy, but it's married to brass tacks, number crunching, you know, making sure assets are profitable. And it's something that we're seeing success with. We just took about 250,000 square feet under management, a new client. And it's something that we believe we can bring a lot of value to syndicators, especially, or maybe a bit of a more hands-off investor, because we're a property manager that also is concerned with, you know, the leasing and the long-term health of the asset. And that's been our pitch to other people. You know, we have a pitch book we send out. It's called Who Wants to Just Manage? You know, we want you to succeed. Managing is like, okay, you know, make sure everything good day to day. We want people to succeed going forward. So that's something that we think is special about us. You know, we have a very experienced team and, you know, the nuts and bolts of management, great financial team. But we also have that added element, that X element, where we work along with brokers to make sure your tenants are happy and keep the leases up. So it's definitely something I want to pitch out there. You know, it's a plug from shameless plug. Blue Property Management, you know, is really a great choice if you're looking to take down an office asset or even just to look at one. You know, we can help underwrite and stuff like that. It's something that we understand all the danger areas in office.
That's your field. That's your expertise.
Yeah, it's really right now our core expertise. Yeah. On a personal level, you know, I mentioned this to you when we first met, is that you know, my father passed away pretty young. He was 60 years old. He passed away almost 3 years ago. And, you know, I have a big, you know, bank of marketing knowledge and business knowledge, mistakes and successes that are all locked up in my head. And my father was someone who was public figure. He helped people out. He was a Kiev rabbi, and he really basically, he just helped people all day. That was his bread and butter. And he just helped people from morning till night. And after he passed away, I was like, listen, I'm just sitting working by myself in my office. There's got to be some way I can give back to the community at large. So what I did is I launched a website called Practical Marketing. And I have a website where people can book pro bono sessions. It's 100% free. I have limited time.
Pro bono sessions?
Yeah, I have a long commute. So I do 4 hours a week. It's like 6 to 7.
What is that? So it's a podcast? It's a show? What is it?
It's one-on-one coaching. People can call me, book a session. I mean, I have YouTube videos. I have blog posts where I talk about, you know, practical marketing
ideas.
Sounds
great. Sounds awesome.
I coach people into making smart, you know, business-oriented marketing decisions. And something I'm proud of. And if anyone wants to reach out, we could put the link in the description, I guess.
But for sure.
I appreciate the time, Yishai.
Thank you so much.
With you. Appreciate you asked a lot of very, very good questions. So you're really on the money with a lot of the questions. I'm happy I was able to answer.
We're in the field. We're a part of the field.
We're part of the game. Audience gained and
learned
a little bit about the inside scoop on Office. Obviously, it's just the tip of the iceberg, but a lot more to say. But we definitely covered the highlights for right now.
Exactly. Thank you so, so much. Really, I appreciate it. And take care of yourself. And yeah, send me all the links. I'm going to post it. You guys, you're going to see Joe's links, you know, everything that is related to the company. Some of them are already there. Some of them are going to add it to it very shortly. But definitely send me all the links and we'll do that. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself.
You're very welcome, Isha. Have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye. Sure. Okay, guys. So here's closing remarks. It was a pleasure. We spoke about Office. And right now, what we want to do is to close it. And I want to tell you one thing. I want to tell you, today's Monday. Go crush it. Go do whatever you need to do. I hope you guys enjoyed this show. Check out all the links below about the company, about the P3 properties, about Joe's marketing endeavors. Check out, again, the CRE Shark Eye Show on YouTube. Subscribe. Get the bell. Get everything you need to do. LinkedIn, you know, be a part of this community. Be a part of everything. And the podcast. Go see the podcasts on Apple. I have the link down below over there or up there, wherever it is. Go see where the link is and sign up for it. Go do the downloads, do the subscribing, do all these. Every platform has its own little, clicking and stuff like that. Go do that. Go do whatever you need to do. And check out my course, of course. Whoever wants to get into commercial real estate, I have this, amazing course for beginners. Check it out. I'm going to put the link also wherever it is, below or above. And I want to wish you guys a great week. Go crush it. Go do whatever you need to do. Take care of yourselves. Until next time, until Thursday, take care. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.